This is CFRA Live on News Talk 580 CFRA.
It's CFRA Live. Good afternoon. I'm Matt Harris. 12:37 Tuesday afternoon. Evan Solomon coming up at 2 o'clock here. We've got this, an interesting story out from Global News. An Ontario man has been arrested on a terrorism peace bond after returning home from Turkey. The man and his wife were arrested in Turkey in July while they were there, apparently on vacation and driving along the Syrian border. They were arrested on suspicion they were trying to join the Islamic State, according to a CBC report. Then they were released from custody after 3 months without any criminal charges. Then they were back home, and he was arrested November the 10th in Guelph over fears that he would participate in activities of a terrorist group. That, according to court documents, in Brampton. Why was he released in the first place? What's a terrorism peace bond? I know we've talked about that a lot before, but all those questions. Here's Phil Gursky of Borealis Threat and Risk Consulting. Phil, good to talk to you again. Thanks for making time for us.
My pleasure, Matt. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Is this case more bizarre than others in the fact that he was arrested and kept for 3 months and then released and then arrested here in Canada? Or have you seen a case quite like this before?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot more questions than answers at this point, I think, Matt. You know, we have talked about peace bonds before. They're a really problematic solution to this whole issue about what to do with Canadians who may, in fact, have terrorist inclinations or terrorist plans. I don't know what's happening here. I'm not sure if there simply is a lack of evidence or maybe all the information has been forwarded from the Turkish authorities. I'm not sure what our relationship is like with Turkey right now. Not surprisingly, Turkey doesn't get along with a lot of Western countries these days with what's happening there. So I think I need to know a lot more about this case, but it certainly seems on the surface to be yet another example of a Canadian who possibly left this country with the intention of joining a terrorist group.
And I mean, I have questions like, why was his wife arrested in Turkey but not arrested with him back in Canada? Is his wife back in Canada? You know, there's just so many unanswered questions here.
I think you're right. And because certainly we know of many cases in the past, and not just in Canada, but around the world, especially the Western world, Matt, of guys and their wives who did go, and they made a conscious decision to go join Islamic State or other terrorist groups in their region. These people weren't duped. They're not, you know, ignorant people. They went there expressly to do this kind of thing. So, yeah, why wasn't she picked up? Yeah, you know what? He could be wrong place at the wrong time. You know, straddling the Turkish-Syrian border is probably not a really good idea in November of 2019 or in the summer of last summer. So maybe he was just, you know, a guy who made a mistake, but as I said earlier, I think there's a lot more information we need in this regard to make that kind of decision as to whether or not he was seriously trying to join a terrorist group like Islamic State.
I know we've talked to you in the past about peace bonds, and you're not the biggest fan of them. But for people who are listening who maybe don't understand exactly what a peace bond would do in this specific instance, what exactly are the restrictions here through this peace bond?
Well, there's all kinds of restrictions, Matt, that, like, you know, the RCMP or police can put on somebody. They can basically tell you that you can't use the internet or you can't contact certain people, or that, you know, if you're going to leave a certain geographic area, you have to tell somebody. Usually there's a surety involved, a person who is responsible for you, and there is some serious financial ponying up that has to happen in that regard. The reason why I'm not a big fan of it, of course, is if you go back to 2016 with the Aaron Driver case, he was the guy, you know, in Strathroy who wanted to join Islamic State. He was arrested, put on a peace bond, and yet a few months later, he ended up building a bomb in his sister's house, and luckily no one was hurt when the bomb went off in the back of a taxi. So peace bonds aren't ideal, but on the other hand, the cops can't charge you unless they have enough evidence, you know, to take to court. So it's not the ideal solution, but it's better than letting you roam the streets completely, completely freely, I guess.
Would this person be monitored now 24/7 by the RCMP or whatever the appropriate authority would be? Or are you just hoping that the surety that's responsible for him is doing their job? How does that work?
Yeah, that's a really great series of questions, Matt. I don't know what kind of priority this is for the RCMP or for my former friends at CSIS where I used to work. You know, there's a lot of talk about so-called returning foreign fighters. What do we do with them? Do we charge them? Do we not? How do we get the evidence? What investigative priority are they? How many people are going to return and maybe plot acts of terrorism here in Canada or radicalize others to do so? So it's hard to say what's on sort of on their daily priority list right now. So I don't know if he's being monitored either through, you know, human intelligence or any kind of court warrant. But I guess it all depends on how serious a threat they think he is. So maybe the peace bond is something that would be enough in place right now to take care of this. But again, without knowing his real intent and why he left this country, and if in fact he was trying to cross the border to join a terrorist group like Islamic State, it's really hard to weigh in on whether or not this is a sufficient tool to use and exactly what's being done on him from an investigative perspective.
This next question just comes from the reporting of Global News when they said that he was not permitted to access the internet for purposes of conducting his business, which they describe as buying and selling products online. Is there a way for the authorities to place some kind of monitoring system on this guy's internet to make sure that he's only checking it out for those reasons? Or are you just hoping that people are honest in this case? How does that work?
Well, if you get a federal court warrant, you can convince a judge that you are allowed to intercept someone's communications, be they telephone communications or internet or social media or carrier pigeon for that matter. So as long as you have the resources in place to do that, you're probably okay. The problem would be, and if I can just mention the Cameron Ortiz case, he's the guy the RCMP arrested for, you know, selling or, you know, doing stuff online he shouldn't have. If you're really savvy with computers, which I am not, by the way, you can probably get around that. But I think you're hoping that you have the tools in place to make sure that if he's going online, you know exactly what pages he's visiting, with whom he's communicating, and what chat rooms or social media platforms that he's accessing. And in that case, that's probably enough. But it all depends on how savvy he is and if he can figure out ways to get around the surveillance.
It really is a strange case with just more questions than answers. So I guess we really just have to wait and see for the rest to see how this plays out. And do you know, is there a time frame that you think we would get more information as the public? Or do you think that the investigators here would want to keep this close to their chest and maybe not let the public in on this?
Yeah, I think so. I think that if a peace bond has been issued, that indicates to me that they're clearly concerned that there's a possible link to terrorism here. So what I'm guessing, you asked the question before about whether he's under investigation. I'm guessing the answer is yes. You wouldn't go as far as to issue this legislative judicial tool if you didn't have legitimate concerns. So I'm going to guess he's under investigation. And if that's the case, neither you nor I nor my, you know, anybody is going to get any information anytime soon on what's happening until such time as perhaps charges are laid. And then we'll learn a little bit more as to why they've gone the route to lay charges. But before then, Matt, I think you and I are going to remain in the dark as all other Canadians are going to at this point.
Phil Gursky's on the line. He's with Borealis Threat and Risk Assessment. And Phil, one other story that was kind of making the news this morning, you mentioned the Cameron Ortiz case, but the other one, a U.S. court refuses to lift the stay on the Omar Khadr appeal, leaving him in legal limbo. It's a name that anytime you mention Omar Khadr, especially a radio station like this with opinionated listeners, I'm going to get flooded with emails about the settlement and stuff. But just from a day-to-day standpoint for our listeners, is there any part of this case that people should be paying attention to?
Not really. I think that, look, Matt, I'm kind of with your listeners. I mean, having worked for CSIS, I'm very familiar with the Khadr family and what they stand for. And their links to terrorism in the past. So I don't waste a lot of time worrying about Omar Khadr. If I were Omar Khadr, I mean, he got his settlement from the Canadian government a couple of years ago. I'd be laying low because, as you said, I think the vast majority of Canadians didn't agree with that settlement. If anybody, the Americans should have ponied up, not the Canadian government. So, you know, is he legally entitled to do this? I suppose. Is it right? I don't know. Is it morally correct? I don't know. But he's, you know, this family has been a thorn in our side for decades. And I think he wanted to not raise his profile at a time where the family is not our favorite to begin with. So I don't really follow it. And if Omar were smart, he'd go on the QT as well with this regard.
All right. I'm just glad to hear someone in your position say that, because that's what I thought. Just go away. We've heard enough about you. Get out of here.
Absolutely. And you know what? Do your thing in quiet on the side, you know, do your legal things and try to push for things, but don't end up on the front page of the paper, because this can't end well for you, because it's going to raise a lot of anger and justifiable anger from a lot of Canadians who felt that we were duped into paying for something we didn't do.
Phil, we appreciate your time. It's too bad that every time I bring you on, it's because there's a pretty serious and not the greatest story in the news, but we always appreciate you making time for us.
Well, my pleasure, Matt. Unfortunately, as a guy that looks at terrorism, I'm used to that. So can we talk about like unicorns and rainbows before Christmas? I really love that.
For sure. I'll just bring you on. We can talk about all the fun stuff in the world.
Phil, thanks, Matt.
Take care. We'll talk to you soon, bye-bye. I'm sure. Phil Gursky is with Borealis Threat and Risk Consulting. It's CFRA Live. I'm Matt Harris. We'll take a break. When we come back, it's the first one of the season. Somebody in this building looked at a concert schedule, saw a break, and thought, is there a Blues Fest date in this band's future? It's my favorite game of the year to play. Who's coming to Blues Fest? We'll tell you what the latest tour is, where that break is in July. Maybe we'll put out a Blues Fest wish list from our listeners. I'm Matt Harris. It's CFRA Live.